Okay.
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 I'm
not
one of those
two. Well, it's just like,
yeah, we have that. All right, it is 4 p.m., so I will call us to order and ask that we do roll call. You want me to handle it or you want to handle it?
I'll do it.
Okay, roll call. We'll do the commission first. Steele.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
McBride. Merkin.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Holstrom. Sherwood.
Here.
Supervisors. Sanders. Here. Chitty.
Here.
Olson.
Here.
We'll wait to do the award presentation, so we'll hold item 2. Work program, Jerry.
Okay. Thank you. It's hard to believe this is the third time that we've gone through the work program since I've been here. Before I start, I want to thank my staff for their energy, effort, and enthusiasm for bringing it every day. There's no way that we could accomplish what we do without them, so I appreciate that. I want to thank Deb for her insight and being a great resource. The phrase in a week that doesn't go by that I'm communicating with her about things that we're going through, so I appreciate her input. I want to thank the Planning and Zoning Commission. Everybody's going to get thanked tonight. I want to thank the Planning and Zoning Commission for your role and interest and enthusiasm. We've had a lot of really good cases before us, and we've had some really good, interesting debate, and I think that's what good planning is all about, so thanks for bringing it every meeting. And then I want to thank the support from the Board of Supervisors. We try to do our best to give you the best recommendations that we can, and hopefully it helps you to make your decision. So,
it is. Come on in. So, Jerry, let me just say this before you get going into the work program, and I won't go through the whole list of thank yous that you gave, but we have a phenomenal planning and zoning staff. And what you guys need to know is we get all kinds of compliments. Even the people that maybe aren't happy with the result, they appreciate the diligence, the timeliness. You guys do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. And I guess, sadly, that is noted for being really, really positive because there aren't many entities that do that. And so we're really, really lucky with the entire staff we have in planning and development. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate that. Thank you. I thought I'd just start off by just giving you a little feedback on the activity levels. I don't have anything in front of you, but we review development permit applications involving a lot of different things, text amendments, conditional use permits, subdivision plats, rezonings, annexations, variance appeals, vacations of roads and alleys, road renamings. And in 2015, we had 103 of those cases. 2016, we had 147. And then this last year, we're projecting around 149. So we're on the upward incline with regard to those things. Yep.
So we've got another house then for 2 months.
Is that
two
today?
Permits. Yeah, and a pole barn.
In December. As long as the weather's good, we'll probably get a few more the rest of this month. Mm-hmm. Zoning permits, 2015 we had 103, 2016 we had 147, let me back up. So the development applications, the numbers that I initially gave you were for zoning permits. So development cases, 17, 2015, 42 for 2016, and for 2017, 53, so, but still upward. Yeah. And then zoning permits, 103, 147, and then 149, probably going to be
like
153,
50. Okay. 152 at this point.
We also do property research. People ask us what they can do with their property. They're interested in doing divisions for the purposes of adding another dwelling, other purposes. We have an application. We charge $30 to do those reviews. 2015, we had 11. 2016, 31. And so far this year, 46. So, again, that's an increase. And then we just kind of looked at how many times we were before the Planning and Zoning Commission, how many items we had. In 2017, there were 27 items. We were before the Board of Supervisors 60 times. But some of those were ordinances, where you're repeating. But still, it just kind of gets to the activity level. And we do hear from you that you see us quite a bit. So we're looking to take it as a positive thing. So
we expect bagels, too, again.
Yeah. We always accept bagels, yes.
By a bagel factory. I was told Panera.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Please.
Sorry.
So what you have before you is the 2018 work program. The 2017 work program had 23 items. 15 of those were carried over from the C2C plan through the implementation matrix. With this plan, there's 26 items on there. And what you see is a couple of things that we've completed. We've taken on some things outside of the work program, which I'll talk about. And we, for the most part, broke it down into what we're calling three tiers. High priority, which these are things that we have plates spinning on that we're working on now. Tier two, medium priority, which our goal is to have these seven things done by July. And then the balance of it, tier three, which we're considering low priority. And some of these things, really, we need to wait, we think, until we complete tier two and tier one items. So that's why they're listed as low priority tier three. And we're planning on having everything that, again, was a part of the implementation matrix, which was adopted by the board. We're planning on having all these things accomplished. You know, we've given this a lot of thought, and we think that this is very achievable. Again, we've got 13 months to attack it. So that's our plan. So the first thing that you see is the two items that we completed, the retail novelty farm, which is now agritourism. We adopted the special events permitting process. We also took on some things that were outside of the work program, process ordinances that dealt with, you know, what you need to do when you're making a submittal for subdivisions, variance appeals, conditional use permits. And that was just recently adopted by the board. We also have been working on a stormwater ordinance, which will amend our existing ordinance. We started that, to be honest, after we started reviewing the third edition of Cameron Estates. That's really what kind of prompted us into acting on making improvements to our existing provision. Right now we have a reference to anytime any development's proposed, there's a reference to meeting the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and the SUDAS requirements, but that's really it. And we get a lot of calls from property owners, builders, engineers that really are seeking more detail from us. So this ordinance that we're working on is hopefully going to provide that necessary detail. And Amelia, do you want to kind of add like where we're at with it?
Sure. So we have been working with engineering and secondary roads, conservation, and Leanne and floodplain management and special projects, and Margaret and environmental health to do kind of a review before we do our interagency review, because those departments would have a lot of feedback on this kind of thing. So we've done this, we're on the second review, and I'll be putting their comments in this week. Then we're going to have Ethan review it, of course, but we're also hoping to have a stakeholder group review the ordinance, including area engineers, developers, and environmental groups, so we get some feedback before we bring it to the board on what the ordinance contains. And that is high priority?
Yeah.
High priority for March, hopefully.
Or before.
And the commission will review that first before it goes to the board?
Yes. Yep. We're also taking on the U.S. Census. The U.S. Census Bureau encourages counties that have the electronic means to review the data on the boundaries and addressing information to assist cities that don't have that capability. So we're going to be assisting the communities, most of them, with the review of both of those things, and that data is supposed to arrive in January or February, so we're going to be getting geared up for that. We have an office across from where we're located, across the hall, designated for that data. We have a computer, a used computer, and an office set up. They have very specific rules about protecting, keeping the data confidential, so that's where we're going to be housed. So, and then tier one, these are high priority things. These are things that we're working on, all of these. Ames Urban Fringe Plan. I think since I started, we've had, you know, take a look at the Ames Urban Fringe Plan for proposed improvements. The last one that we looked at was the East Industrial expansion. We are looking at the area from North Ames to Gilbert. We're looking at the existing land use. We're looking at development activity, where the zoning permits have occurred, subdivision plats. We've had contact with the school districts to find out, like, what their plans are for expansions, busing information. We're looking at the natural resource areas, stormwater drainage. What else am I missing? We're looking at as much as we can, and we're putting together a recommendation. We plan to sit down with the city staff at Gilbert and Ames before we come to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then before we go on to the Board of Supervisors for a recommendation.
Yes, so the Board of Supervisors just over a year ago made a request, actually to the city of Ames, never gotten to Gilbert, that we could review a quarter of the Ames Urban Fringe plan a year and try to work through the whole thing every year rather than trying to deal with it piecemeal, whether it's a request made on this piece of property so we need to change it. There's still going to be some of that, but it just seems to me that in this fluid environment, you know, things don't look like they looked in 2003 when the initial Urban Fringe plan was put together, finally adopted in 2009 or 10. And we're told by the city of Ames, yeah, we have interest in that, but we're moving down the road of this comprehensive plan right now. I think it's all hands on deck over there right now. I would hope that that's something that's going to continue to be a possibility. But you've had conversations with staff. What's your sense?
Well, and they just had that study done, too, on the northwest side. And, you know, there's been comments about how much they can serve in the northwest and the north area with their existing system. And you know, what their limitations are. I don't think they see themselves growing beyond 190th, at least right now, unless significant changes.
Right, but they saw growth on North Dakota when the plan was originally put together, and I don't believe they see that anymore simply with the sewer constraints. And so it seems to me that there's an opportunity to get the map more reflective of what the realities on the ground today are. And if we're dealing with a quarter of it every year, there's not going to be this stop and start feeling that we have of only dealing with things when market forces come to bear. I think we should be more planful than that.
I agree with that. And did you say you had or had not contacted Gilbert?
Had not, no. It went from the Board of Supervisors through Jerry to the city of Ames, and it's been, well, the city of Ames has not acted one way or another on the request, have indicated interest. But as I see it, and maybe this isn't right, but as I see it, it's still kind of hanging out there as a possibility.
Well, it'll come up, too, when we meet with them on what we're working on. Construction, demolition, landfill, feels like we've been working on this for months and months. The goal is to try to find some locations in the unincorporated area if there's a disaster, whether it be a flood, tornado, that we would have a place to bring debris to process, to sort, and, you know, to wait until such time the material can be taken to Boone or to Polk County or wherever it would go. But we've had a lot of communication with Keith and his staff. We've met with Ames Resource Recovery, the Boone County Administrator, Landfill Administrator. You attended a session.
A workshop on hazard mitigation and disaster debris planning with Keith.
But one of the things that we're trying to get some information from is the DNR on what the requirements will be once, you know, to leave the site, and we want to be real sound on what those items are. Mm-hmm. And we have a meeting set up finally to
they said they could meet after the 12th, which is great. We've been trying for months to get this set up, so we're hopeful.
And let's be really clear on what this is not. This is not discussion of a permanent landfill. This is not discussion of any of that. This is what happens. So we did a test where basically we hit Huxley with a F5 tornado. So this is, if something comes all the way across central Iowa and we have major damage, how quickly do you think all the landfills in the area are going to just shut down and not be accepting anything? And in that case, what do we do as a county in terms of removing some of the debris? And right now, we don't have a solid mechanism for dealing with that. That's what this is.
Well, a lot of the DNR regulations seem to be set up for like permanent type facilities, so I think that's what their struggle is.
And some of the requirements, you know, could potentially be waived if there was an emergency situation declared disaster, depending on the level.
Absolutely, but we would prefer to have a plan in place ahead of time rather than saying, oh my goodness, what do we do now, and then try to figure it out.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of jurisdictions do that.
Absolutely.
That's
how do you know when you can check that one off? What's the deliverable? Is it leases on property? Is it options? Is it memos of understanding with three or four property owners? What's the...
A combination of the lease agreement and we've got an ordinance have been reviewed by the county attorney's office. They're pretty solid with it. We've got we need to meet with the property owners, make sure that we're on the same page. We've got a we're calling it a mini plan that we're adding to the ordinance that we're adopting, and then just be real solid on what's going to be required to leave the site, because we don't want to get into a situation where it's going to be, you know, it's going to be very costly and cumbersome.
Yeah. How do you know when you're done?
Right, exactly. So that's what we're...
But we've approached it from a lease perspective.
The finding the locations is the...
And we've got some really good...
Yeah, I mean, we've discussed that several times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do you have... I mean, there's no contract, though, with those property owners.
Not yet. I think after we meet with the DNR, they can give us some solid, and this is what is required when you leave the site, that we can incorporate into that lease, so we're not on the hook for, oh, we're going to make you test for this and remediate for that one. That was never understood. And
gotcha.
Not part of baseline conditions. I think we'll be able to sit down with property owners after that point. Yeah.
So just tell me if I'm right on this. So I've been viewing this more or less as a staging area where we would take debris, we would have it sorted, and we would hold it until right. such time as we can move it on. And it's supposed to be as simple as that. Now, I know that's overly simplified, but that's the way I've been viewing this all the way
through. Yeah.
I think we agree. But there are rules, too, about how long the material can be there, too. So we're hearing that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you're bringing...
Household hazardous waste,
uh-huh. and you're bringing barrels and whatever
electronics
and stuff that leaks.
And, uh-huh.
There's a lot of details. We've got, Ames has contracts with Metro Waste in Polk County, but then we have to make sure that we're added to those policies and programs, because they'll come to your sites.
Right.
The mobile unit, so nothing is on the ground
right.
that's hazardous, which is...
and deal with it, and there's suits.
Right. Kind of a second part to this that I think is going from emergency management to all of our municipalities is a request that they pass ordinances that talk through how items would need to be sorted as it was before it left the original property, the property it originated from.
Yep. We have a draft ordinance like that, certainly.
With photos that shows
how to sort it,
the piles. And
but we can't compel a municipality. We need them to adopt something similar.
Right, this would be for the unincorporated area.
Yeah. Fernald, we just had a meeting, follow-up meeting with them about a week ago. We were reporting back on the items that they listed. They had concerns about missing E911 signs, traffic signs, their dilapidated houses, issues with the road. But the common complaint was the issue with stormwater drainage and flooding. And so we through our research, we found a potential grant that through the USDA Rural Development Program that might help with a study for the existing tiling system and the drainage situation there. We asked them to indicate whether or not they would be interested. We received 9 or 10 yeses and probably 4 or 5 no's, and some of those are people that have been flooded. So we sent out the letter to the rest of the households within the drainage district because we want to complete the process, and then once we get that information back, our plan is to come back to the board.
What percentage would we need?
Well, at least over 50% thumbs up that they're interested in participating, but participation, we need 90% of the 48 households.
To validate the survey. And if we had, you know, 5 folks say they're not interested,
right.
which is...
Well, people could change their mind.
Sure, but just anecdotally,
those that choose to live in a community like Pinole.
You don't know these people.
More private.
Jerry, you want to talk about that?
Right. It's a problem we got to take care of. We got to figure out. So there's a big tiling system that runs through up there. It was never intended to handle what it's got to handle. And it's got
to build the 20s.
Yeah. And so.
You have to have 90% response rate to an income
survey. On the survey, yeah. The
lower moderate income.
They have an organization that will do the survey.
It's all through the USDA. We don't put a touch on it. Mm-hmm. County, it never sees our eyes. But they still, I think you got enough tread on me up there that I don't think we're going to get that far.
Yeah, nobody knows about the information other than the person that's doing the survey.
Is there any sort of backup plan, say if you don't get enough support for the existing survey?
Well, one thing that came up was from one of the property owners that we should have a camera sent through the tile that we should see what's inside there. Maybe there's some obstructions, and I think our county engineer is aware of some of that. But there's a cost to that, and I think through the Drainage District Board, they would have the authority to issue or support a program or a project such as that. But, you know, we talked about grants, there's loans, but then the Drainage District Board has the authority to to do special assessments and bonds or whatever.
And the Board of Supervisors, in this case, serve as the Drainage District trustees. We have added complexity with the railroad.
Right.
So you have a tile that runs in there underneath the railroad that goes through this town. And they won't answer their mail, email, snail mail, or the phone. If you do get somebody, they always say it's somebody else.
And part of the problem is the railroad right away. We walked it. We had we met with representatives from, was it IDALS, Department of Ag and Land Stewardship, and you can clearly see that there's some low spots within the railroad right away where, during heavy rainfall events, that water is extending easterly to some of those homes that are on the west side of the major or south street there. And so Darren, our county engineer, is in the queue. There's a process that you go through to ask to communicate with the railroad. And he's in the queue to make that pitch.
Well, it's $500 just to get him to answer you.
For the permit.
We'd like to just jet the line. I mean, maybe if we get lucky, there's an obstruction on a 6-inch tile that would ameliorate some of this. But until they say yes, you won't find anybody will jet a tile, knowing that if the railroad goes sideways on it, you don't have enough money to get that on the wrong side of their borders.
Jerry, I have a question related to zoning. When it comes up there for the individual neighbors, if they're redirecting their water onto another property, because when we had one of the Richland 20, right, that's the drainage district up there, and a meeting afterwards, one of the women came up to talk to me, and it was her neighbor who is basically, she's on the west side, mm-hmm. and the railroad tracks in her back, and so anyway, then she was getting more money because her neighbor had figured out a way to drain his yard into hers. But can we control that part of it?
We're proposing grading permits. As a way to maybe address that kind of thing, because I think we're aware of the property owner that you're speaking of, and this particular neighbor added made a peninsula, so his property wouldn't be impacted during the heavy rainfall events, but apparently it's a situation that's causing an issue for her.
I went out, actually, to just view it, and she was supposed to be home. I knocked on the doors, she has dogs, so mm-hmm. I couldn't get at the door. And so it turned out she was home. But anyway, so I did go out and I physically saw her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're aware of that.
Right, but to answer Laura's question, at least what I think the question is, that is really a civil suit between the two individuals, and at this point anyway, it's not a county
situation. But we are working on this stormwater ordinance, and we're incorporating grading permits.
Right. We've had this issue with the Cameron Estates with their addition and the people with Hickory Hills and mm-hmm. some of the issues that they're seeing. And when we, I think if I remember right, when we looked at it, that there wasn't any actual ordinance that talks specifically or in enough detail to...
Not enough detail.
Right. Okay.
And that's what we're working on, to try to give more clarification, clarity to the engineers, to the property owners, so they know what to submit.
And did I just see a response from that engineer back to you on this the other day?
He sent something, an email that I was wanting to talk to.
All right.
And not a, such, it wasn't a very positive response at all.
But an ordinance cannot be retroactive, can it?
No.
So you could write an ordinance, but it won't be applicable to that situation.
Be applicable next time somebody. Next,
yeah, right. Like through a so new application.
The ordinance would not be a solution to that situation.
Drainage district, I'm not an expert on this, but I think maybe what you're talking about is when you drain outside of the drainage district from a drainage district, I think there might be an issue draining into a drainage district from outside or from
there,
a drainage district.
There is, yep.
So, that's
absolutely, but the part of whether you're in a drainage district or not, if you impede or cause water to flow onto your neighbor, it's handled in state code, and it's a civil kind of suit. That already exists, right? So that was the option of the people that live up there in Hickory Hills, if it didn't get fixed, was civil suit. And so it'll be interesting to see. I mean, this will be one of those that when it comes forward to you guys and then ultimately to us, it'll have a lot of people on both sides of the issue.
It was an exciting conversation when they came for the phase three.
Right.
And, you know, to their credit, they're taking it back and looking at, you know, what they can do to fix it. So.
Well, and I think that's the email that I just saw come in from Scott Renaud.
It was on 1 and 2, and they're requesting their letter of credit back. I guess if someone they want to do anything. So. 4, audit regulations to determine whether we have smart development practices that limit disaster impacts. We've gone through our ordinance. We really don't have anything specific, but we reached out to county zoning officials through the COZO, and the responses that we got back were that it's kind of a sticky wicket. You want to make sure that you don't be too restrictive, so that you get into a taking situation. So internally we've had a lot of discussions about this, and we've talked to Keith about it, and one thing that we think we can do now, not to close this, but to move in a positive direction, is to add something on our zoning permits. When we get something from a non-residential use, they are required to register with the DNR, like tier 2, if they're going to store, house, tier 2 chemicals, and that might be one way that we can communicate with his department, because he says it takes several months a lot of times for his department to be apprised of new locations where hazardous materials are being stored. So that's one thing that we think we're going to do there. Develop and implement requirements for groundwater impact analysis. Again, we've got some language in our stormwater ordinance that we're amending. We're also including some language about grading permits. If a proposed activity is going to impact 10,000 square feet of land, then that's potentially going to kick in a requirement for a grading permit. Also, too, if it's a subdivision plat where there's 3 or more lots, development lots being proposed, or if you're going to impact natural resources, then it's going to kick in this new ordinance that we're working on. We actually lumped these two together. Conduct a comprehensive review of land development regulations, which are these, including rezonings as necessary to implement C2C and future land use map and review regulations prior to 1985 for obsolete, ineffective, or unenforceable regulations. We've gone through the ordinance. We've got some ideas on, you know, not to create new requirements, but to add more clarity to the ones we have. So you'll probably see something, Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, within a couple of months, I would think.
Okay. But what's going forward for codification?
is exactly what we have now.
Right. Right. With the changes that we've
even with the issues, I know we've got a couple of circular issues on several different ordinances, but even with those, it's going forward.
Process ordinances will be included in the codification, and then the ones that Leanne worked on for like C2C, you know, what the process you go through to amend the C2C plan. What else?
Solar energy, special events. Mm-hmm.
Those will all be in the codification. Transportation impact analysis. We think this is timely. Emily and I have been working on it. We look to the adjacent counties, Boone, Hamilton, Marshall, Polk. Polk was the only one that had anything. Theirs is pretty limited, but it's a pretty decent start. We've looked at several others. I think conceptually what we envision is anytime we get a subdivision plat submitted, it would also include some analysis by an engineer so that we're able to capture, based on your number of lots, what the average daily traffic levels will be, what the peak levels will be, and if it kicks in a certain percentage or certain numbers beyond what the current counts are on the county roads, like, you know, 50 to 100 cars, or if it's a certain percentage, then that's going to be enough, and we're going to be involved in the county engineer in the review of this. It's going to kick in the need to do a study, and what we're trying to figure out is, with this proposed development, what's going to be the impact to the surface? Does the right-of-way need to change? What's the impact on the adjacent intersections? Do we need to look at signalization? All those kinds of things. So there's quite a few ordinances out there. Probably the biggest thing to really get a handle on, I think, is the fee portion of it. Most of the ordinances that we looked at, they spread the joy around. It's not something that the county or the cities are paying for. They're requiring developers to pay based on like how many trips are being generated. Anything else you want to add to that?
I think one example we looked at was something like $1,300 per trip generated or something like that as an impact fee.
And you have a fund created.
So that's just one example.
We'll be working closely with Lisa, as I said, Darren on it. But because it's an ordinance, we'd also be working with the Planning and Zoning Commission.
That'd be fascinating to see what you guys come up with.
Floodplain certification test in March.
Let's go, Jerry.
Yeah, get it down, right?
I heard rumors that was one of the harder tests out there. I find that to be true.
Okay, I'll come clean. I've taken certification training before. There's actually been training. There's no training with this. There's a lot of information. I took it down at the state, and there was a five-hour training before the test, a three-hour test, and there were 10 of us, and 5 of us didn't pass.
Wow.
And so I'm taking it again.
And so what I'd be interested in is how many, so 10 of you, 5 did pass, 5 didn't. How many of the 5 that passed, this was not their first time? Because that's what I hear is, it's multiple times.
There was one person in the 10 that had to retake it, and I was close. I missed it by 4 questions.
Are they the same questions every time?
Well, I don't know. It's hard because they don't give you your test, and so they kind of tell you what areas you're low in or lacking in. But I was not very happy when I got those results. So, anyway.
Water district that you were low in, then we'll have to have some like remedial training with Leanne or something.
There you go. You need to schedule some time. Chair 2, medium priorities. Again, our goal is to accomplish these 7 things by July. Comprehensive review, update of LISA. We have a pretty solid system in reviewing requests for proposals. I'd never seen anything like it. That I've worked in 4 different jurisdictions, and so I was impressed when I got here. But I don't know, do you guys have any comments? These are to do the reviews. As far as I mean, from a time perspective, like if I'm going to do a review, we use our GIS system. It takes me probably an hour. These guys are much quicker at doing them. But I think we see possibly Iowa State University graduate program, GIS program assisting with, you know, reviewing this. We'd like to make it a little more scientific. We did kind of an informal with Jonathan and PJ. You guys, they had some questions about how it works. Do you have any thoughts about it?
It needs to be simplified a lot, in my opinion, but still capture what you need.
Yeah, part
it needs to be it needs to be understandable for the public, more important, I think. So it seems too technical right now. I mean, it can be technical, but you've got to be able to explain it to the public and us. I mean, and I'm still, I still don't quite.
Maybe it's just this, you know, the end result scaled scoring or something with something that is explainable, right?
We need to be able to capture the changes, though. You know, you've had comments too, Aaron, about if there's something that we could put on the computer, on our website, which would be easy and accessible, but we need to be able to capture changes that take place.
Has a black box quality to it. Mm-hmm. And also,
getting that feeling.
And the biggest thing I don't like about it is that in order to have some indication as to how the regulations apply to your property, you have to have an analysis run, as opposed to, it's in our regulations, it's important to us, then let's run the results once a month and let's post them and make them available to the public. There's got to be a way. I know there's some subjective components to it, but I wonder if we've ever compared using the subjective components to leaving out the subjective components and see how the results differ that much, because I think it's something that could be automated and then the public could have a check in anytime to see what the lease is for under parcel.
It's definitely something that you could automate if there were adjustments to some of the more subjective.
I think Linn County
took
out some of the subjective parts of it and runs it on, or at least some time ago, was running it on a periodic basis. So constantly producing new scores. For them.
I think so, Scott County.
Scott County.
Right.
Okay.
Well, so just tell me. So I've always viewed our LISA scores as trying, whether it's a black box quality or not, but trying to protect our most productive farm ground. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, right?
Absolutely.
It seems like we should be able to get there without it being subjective. It's either, I mean, isn't it either high-quality farm ground or it's not?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like anything else, the more, if you want to recognize the nuances in that question, you have to make the solution more complex. And so, you know, what makes a piece of farmland high quality, just that it's really good black dirt, or that it's really good black dirt in a place that's easy to access with machinery and to get grain to market from that site and to not be interfered with by development.
Right.
Or you have all the close yard city limits also goes in there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the utilities.
Mm-hmm. There's some things I don't know if I understand that they really fit that goal.
Well, it'd be interesting if maybe Iowa State could come back and do an analysis, say, over the last 20 years to see what has happened, if it was effective or not.
Oh.
And then make changes.
Sounds like a good thesis project.
Yeah.
But in terms of effective, you really have to really say, here is the absolute goal. And I'm not, I feel muddy about that when I look at the thing. In terms of the goal.
Well, am I missing on that our goal is to protect our highest quality farm ground? I understand that's oversimplified, but isn't that our goal?
I think it's the goal.
Okay.
But I'm not sure that how much the current, when you look at the current LISA, how much that really works. It's like, I'm not sure that everything that's in it goes.
Well, I'm completely willing to accept that we need to dig in and see what's going on with LISA and is there a better way to get there. But I think it's really important that we start with the underlying goal, and that is that we protect and maintain our most valuable farm ground. And now I understand we got to define exactly what that means and all the components.
but we start from there.
Our approach is kind of interesting. We look at the the location of where they want to do the proposed change, and then it also goes within a mile too to look at the land use. So,
and Rick, I might suggest in addition to your goal, in addition to preserving the best front ag land, it's also looking at seeing if the site is prime for development. Is it close to other? Is it close to utilities? Is it close to other houses? Is it just in the middle of?
Well, there's examples in what the Board of Supervisors do every year. We just paved 3.5 miles of new roads. Took them from gravel to pavements. First time Story County has done any substantial paving in 25 or 30 years, and we've got 3 more gravel roads in our 5-year calendar. Now they're not funded yet, but you think about so that those 3 roads are 13th Street coming out of Ames all the way across to 600, so coming over toward Nevada. It'll save Loris getting stuck on 580th waiting for a train. You got 650th coming up into Huxley? Is it 650th? Is that right? 560th coming up into Huxley, which was more about some industrial activity that's going on down there that now is looking iffy. And then the final one is University headed south out of Ames down to the Kelly Blacktop. Well, all 3 of those areas are primarily ag areas. 2 of them are kind of becoming a little more industrial. But if those roads were to get paved, like I believe we're going to see north of 190th along Grant, Breton, Hyde, 530th, whatever you want to call it, that we just paved going into Gilbert, I think that's going to, whether you like it or not, that's going to spur some activity in those areas. And however we calculate that,
The number 2, develop density-based zoning program. 3, establish location guidelines for proposed subdivisions. And 5, establish minimum levels of services. So you kind of see the clumping of those. And with the C2C plan, we have, when we met with the city administrators in Huxley, Nevada, Story City, they talked to us about where they envisioned their growth areas to occur. And so through that comprehensive planning process, we designated urban growth areas. So I think with these 3 or 4, we think that those are likely locations where those might fit in. We need to sit down with the city administrators because with the C2C plan and the urban growth areas, if we get a subdivision plat in those areas, we're supposed to check with the city. Is it an area that they want to annex? Do they want to require their development standards? And we, for the most part, we're yielding to them. But again, with these, they kind of all go hand in hand, and we think those are likely locations to start, at least. Designate natural resource areas on future land use map. Emily's been working pretty hard on that. She started with Ames area, Franklin Township, and Nevada Grant. Those are done in draft. And then you also see under 5, Tier 3, to take care of the rest of the areas. For whatever reason, our mapping is pretty lacking when it comes to the natural resource outlines of our treat areas. We don't have a lot of wetland areas, but so she's been working hard to make more sense out of it based on what the conditions are on the sites in the field. What else? Tier 3, again, our goal is to have these done by 2018 December. Again, these are things that I don't think that we think they'll take a lot of time, but we thought that we needed to get the other items done in the other 2 tiers before we started working on them. We've had discussions about our parking standards, and we think they're pretty solid. They're maximum standards. I've never worked anywhere where we have maximum. We were thinking about it, including some language about minimum. There might be some language about requiring like ADA parking. That's I think the guidelines talk about stable surface, maybe requiring a paved
area, and then access to the building, because that's really what the goal of ADA is, that, you know, when you come to a facility, that you have a stable surface and a route to the building that's safe and stable. Lighting, again, I think it's pretty solid. We might need to request some amendments. The intent is that the fixtures that we have be more downward facing. I think we need to stay away from having an ordinance that talks about lumens, because you need the equipment, and it's, you know, somewhat subjective. It's difficult to measure. So I'm not seeing a lot of major changes to the lighting standards. And then we're requesting to add a couple of things. Demolition permits, we get calls frequently. People want to know if there's a permit requirement. Currently, we don't have anything. The idea would be that we would be able to get information to the assessors and the auditor's office so that they can start that process to get those buildings off the tax rolls. And then, two, we would be doing inspections to make sure that the hole is covered and safe, and then we can communicate, not that I want to be an expert on state requirements for hazardous materials, but that's often what you're dealing with, buildings that are older and have hazardous materials, that we're able to communicate the importance of contacting the DNR to check with what those standards are. So again, this would involve some follow-up on our part. And then we don't have, you know, we have a site plan requirement, but no fee. You know, we get site plans for conditional use permits. Sometimes we just get site plans for non-residential uses. There's a lot of work spent on reviewing site plans, multiple reviews back and forth with engineers, property owners, and then we do inspections. We, you know, it's part of our job to make sure that the sites get implemented in accordance to what was approved. So we think there's a need to do that. And demolition permit, probably a $50 fee. Site plan, $50, you know, maybe a little more.
How many site plans do we review?
We have a number. Again, for conditional use permits, we get them. Sometimes we get them when there's no building, like the by Story City, they're proposing some landscape changes, relocating a building, and they weren't applying for the zoning permit. So, you know, we've got time reviewing it and no fee.
But are we talking about $10,000 or $50,000 or what are we talking about? Yeah,
in site plan fees?
Yeah.
$1,000.
Maybe. You're going to do 20 of them here?
Yeah.
Probably at least that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I always worry about balancing. I like the model of having skin in the game. Somebody needs something. But we also are requiring everybody to pay their taxes, and this is one of the things that we do. And so I just want to be careful that we don't go chasing, causing issues where we don't need to cause issues, where it really doesn't impact us on the back end. So that's not an absolute pro or con. Right. That's just... Be cautious.
How much time do you think it takes
to do a review on us? You both do them.
Well, the inspections take at least, you know, 1 to 2 hours and there's two inspections, but then the review and the comments can take a couple hours too. And sometimes we usually do two rounds of comments.
At minimum, we're doing two rounds.
Yeah.
And the most important part of that is, are they building in accordance to what their design, you know, their plans show? You know, I think that's a very important part of what we do. Amelia mentioned the inspections. It's amazing how much time it takes to do an inspection on the northeast part of the county, the southwest. She 2 days ago, she went on 3 inspections, and she was gone for 3.5 hours.
Yeah, how's the RAV4 holding up, by the way?
Great.
Okay, good.
They're going to level B, right?
Yeah.
Held up
to the line. Yeah. Yeah. It does well on the gravel roads.
Wayne got stuck one time on a level B, and that's an embarrassing phone call to make.
I know. I think building a house on one. I had to go there.
Wow. Where are they doing that?
690?
Yeah, most of the level B's are over this way.
That's the only access is a level B?
think there might have been another one, and I just didn't know where it was.
Okay. All right. I was gonna say, we don't need anybody going on level B.
Yeah. Really?
Shouldn't be able
to. Another reason to come down to time again.
I need 140.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I know. It's going to
work.
Did
you roll the number 4 and tier 2 into the first, 3-5?
That's probably going to be a standalone thing, and we're going to be working with Darren on that.
Okay.
But, again, the goal is to have that done by July of 2018.
Are they looking in terms of complete streets, then, at trying to connect existing trails, then, or existing bike infrastructure?
I think that'll be a component of it. But that's all that we have to report. Be happy to answer any questions. And then, of course, if the commission has ideas and things in the board that you would like us to...
Well, so let's stick with streets and talk a little about what we've learned this year about our private streets, what has been designated to the county but never accepted by the county, and whatever you can. And if you can't talk about some of that, that's fine. We've learned a lot about streets, and we've learned that we need to figure out signage, private drive. I mean, we've got some issues that I don't see reflected in here, and maybe they're not reflected in here for great reasons. I want everybody to be on the same page.
Yeah, we met with Darren and Deb, and who else was Ethan. We do have a few situations out there where we've got they're private driveways. There are easements that go in with development lots, single family dwellings. They're mapped on our GIS system as a street. We've got street signs. But yet when we do the research, we're finding out that they're not streets at all. They haven't been dedicated to the public. There's no resolution.
I would add, we've got street signs but no traffic control signs, so we've got multiple locations where it looks like a street and there's no stop or yield as it enters a
roadway.
So if it's a driveway, that's fine. I know backing out of my driveway, I don't have the right of way, right? But if I'm on a street and I don't have a stop sign or a yield sign, I think maybe I'm able to go, and I think we've got some issues, some structural issues in dealing with those things. I think that's fair to say.
And Ethan, I know, is working on researching, what we can and can't do in those situations where it's clearly not a publicly dedicated road right-of-way. But there was an example on the north side of Ames. What subdivision was that? Where there was a request to add a traffic or try to limit with the closing
of
the bridge.
Yeah, so that's based on the bridge that we closed on 190, right?
A request to add a certain sign
and so that's a private road that's dedicated to public access, which is entirely different. And then we got some that are completely private roads, not dedicated to public access, but still show up. I mean, I'm just saying, this is a ball of yarn that's going to be really, really interesting as we start to pull on it.
Does your GIS database in your attributes, does it indicate whether it's private or public or, public can drive on it? Is there any way to differentiate?
Probably
so there kind of needs to be an inventory of these roads that are questionable. So then there can be a survey done on each one.
There's probably three for sure that I'm aware of.
Yeah, but there is more gray area than that even. I mean, where it stops being a private driveway that serves three homes and starts being... I'm telling you, it's been convoluted since what, the early 70s? Is that about right? It's a convoluted, tough deal that, as I understand it, it's with legal, and probably we should just leave it there
for now. But I mean, we can certainly put something in to have that to work on it, to provide information to the Planning and Zoning Commission.
And if you're going to do something related that has any kind of ordinance or amendment impact, you're going to want to get their input anyway. So at a bare minimum, you want to coordinate.
Thank you.
Yep. Anybody else?
I think it's really, really good. I mean, you guys stay busy. I started our joint meeting with the fact that you guys do an outstanding job. You still, I'm amazed by what, I hope these timelines are close. I'm amazed by what you're suggesting you're going to get done in the next 3, 6, and 12 months. Because it's substantial.
They come with trash shoes on every day.
This is substantial stuff, absolutely. I would say let's just make sure that we maintain, and you guys have done a great job of this, but maintain the flexibility with your time schedules to deal with those things we have to deal with, and don't get bogged down on these things that we want to deal with. Don't get overly bogged down. You know, that would be my caution.
Yeah, get driven by productivity. Don't get driven by the timeline.
Yes.
Well, again, we feel like we've got 13 months to work on this, and you know,
as Morris and I talked about pretty regularly, 13 months in government is a different time frame.
I heard, as you know, you may come so often, you hear me moan a lot about time and government. Yeah.
Could I suggest that a lot of these things that you propose are essentially assessments of what's going on currently, what's been going on historically, what should we do in the future, and they don't all have to end in a brand new set of regulations.
Right.
You know, like Tier 1, Number 5, develop it and implement requirements for groundwater impact analysis. I think I know what you mean, but I think it'd be okay if assess whether requirements for groundwater impact analysis are necessary, you know, and when, if they are necessary. And it doesn't all have to be, we have to put out a shiny new product.
Yep.
Right.
I think that's phenomenal.
One of the questions I asked Jerry earlier in the year had to do, though, with this stormwater ordinance and, like, the problems at Cameron Estates and what would they be able to bring forward that would address some of these. And so I don't know if there's a middle ground in between.
I'm not suggesting that it's either one right now. I'm just suggesting that the first step is to sit down and see to what effect does a new set of regulations help us, and is it worth the drawbacks of a new set of regulations?
Analyze if there is actually a problem.
Right. Yeah, and whether it be adequately solved by a new set of regulations. Mm-hmm. Or if there's alternatives to it. They're incentive packages.
Well, yeah, so worst case scenario is that you guys put in all this work developing a product that for whatever reason can't get through to the end of the process, right? And so what I'm hearing you suggest is take a look at what we can do, what is appropriate to do, and what kind of impact it has, and then ultimately, are we going to be able, I mean, you can't absolutely predict whether it's going to get all the way through, but we can pretty well know what kind of hurdles we're going to run into on some of this stuff.
Start at the beginning, not start at the end.
Yeah, I mean, with stormwater, I mean, we just have a reference to, you know, you have to meet these requirements, and we just don't, it's not effective at all. We get the questions from the engineers that have, they need more guidance. And so that's what our attempt is to try to do.
The ordinance, does it come with a manual? And so to clear up the...
So it references the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual.
Okay.
And it's based on standards in that manual and model ordinances from that manual.
Best management practices.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work for engineers who are calling you because...
They're really just getting clarification with regard to our ordinance because the standards are different in all the jurisdictions that they work in, you know.
Okay.
So they're trying to get clear as to what is it that we really want. And
so they expect
it's hard to voice
have
that.
A unique set of standards.
Yeah, we can say, well, you have to use best management practices identified in the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and SUDAS for erosion control, but...
Part of that is there's nothing in the ordinance that gives it teeth that makes anything enforceable.
Right. And supposedly Cameron Estates should have met the Iowa Stormwater Management.
I remember when that was presented originally, phase, you know, to the original presentation, and there was a lot of discussion and concerns about the existing tile system and the creek and water runoff, and they were adamant and presented all this information about how with the retention that they were doing and the grasses and the landscaping and whatnot, that they were, there would actually be less runoff than it was as an existing farm, and that has proven to not be the case. And or maybe the volume of the runoff is not the issue, it's the concentration
there
of
you
the
go.
Runoff, right? Yep. That rather than having, I don't know, let's say a 1,000 cubic feet that runs off across all the acreage, you now have 500 cubic feet, but it runs off in two distinct points.
Right.
Right. And it's causing problems.
In response to all that, they have constructed, you know, with regard to the engineering study analysis that Hickory Hills Association requested, they have designed a pretty large, I think it's a detention basin, to address a lot of that, you know, the collection of that stormwater. So it's going to run off.
I've driven by there, riding my motorcycle and stuff out that way, and so I have stopped a few times as I'm going that way, thinking about it, that and stopped to look, and right on the what would be the southeast corner of the property where they have that big retention pond and or area, small pond, that one of the complaints was is that it when it gets full, it drains over the road. You know, instead of draining, what direction would that be?
Northeast.
North, right? And staying within the confines of their property, headed toward the creek or, you know, whatever the natural drainage way is, it goes across the road, and then now it's the Hickory Hills. First of all, the road erosion potential, and then secondarily, it's now their problem to deal with all the water.
You said it goes across the road, it goes across Cameron, or it goes across Hickory Hills?
No, it goes across the Hickory Hills.
It goes Hickory Hills.
Right.
Okay.
But that's pretty specific, but I think the concept is that it would be nice to have something in the wording of the ordinance about that's enforceable in a way that we can say, yes, you can do that, or no, you can't do that.
I don't speak to that anymore. I mean, this is very specific, very detailed. We plan to debate later.
On-site practices.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
Not off-site.
All right, we're at 5 o'clock. Anything else for us as a joint meet?
Do you need action?
Oh, yeah. Support place for what you see before you. With and then, do you want to add something there on private streets, signage, or kind of build that in as to, you know, as we'll work on some of these other things that relate to it?
You have these new items down here, the demolition permits and the site plan. Where did you want to fit those in? Because those sound like something that you're actually dealing with now that needs to be.
Yeah, that would be
addressed in the work.
We would say that would be higher priority.
So you want to add more before March?
Well, these two things we would like to add.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
I guess I'm looking for a proposal, right? You have them listed as new items. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to add them? Tier 1, 2, or 3?
1.
Okay.
High priority.
Do you
need a motion
from each body individually or joint?
Why don't we just do it where you guys act on it and it will come to us in a regular meeting, even as it's consent agenda, but it needs to be part of our regular meeting for us to appropriately to act on.
And I think last year I had an update in January and I asked for your support on it.
Okay. Is there a planning commission member want to make a motion?
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve the proposed work plan, amending with adding the new items as Tier 1 items.
Second, anyone?
Second.
Yes. Adding the road inventory. Public-private road.
Yes. What about the language that you were discussing?
I was speaking hypothetically.
Yeah. I think we're good with it.
So we have a motion and a second by Ruth. Yeah, we need a discussion on the motion. Let's just do a voice vote then. If there's no discussion, all in favor of the Planning Commission, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right. All right, so final item for us before we adjourn the joint meeting is a big thank you to Ruth and a presentation of this plaque that they put together for her. Just thanking you for your service. Thank you so much. Thank you. Here is the box. We can all say, oh, yeah, shake hands so she takes a picture. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Got it? All right. Okay.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
It's been good. I really enjoyed it.
All right, let's call tonight's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Can we get a roll call vote, please? Yes.
Taylor.
Yes.
McBride absent. Merkin.
Here.
Smith.
Yes.
Holstrom. Here.
Sure. Very good. Just one agenda, Jerry. It's all on one. Yeah, just one. Save the paper. Fine. Gotcha. Okay. Are there any changes or additions to tonight's agenda? None?
We just talked about.
Let's
just ask, how long do you think the training on the urban fringe plan will take?
20-25 minutes.
20-25.
What's the case load look like for January? Any idea?
I had some notes written down. Probably one or two of the things that we discussed in our previous meeting. Any development cases? We had some things that got pulled because there may be a need to request a text amendment, and so we're kind of working through that. But
I'd say with PJ not being here and with potentially a Ruth's replacement, it would make more sense to push it to January. I mean, you're running that risk, right? But I'd rather do that.
I move that we move agenda item number 10 to January.
10.3.
Yeah.
I'll second that.
All right, we have a proposed change to the agenda.
10.3.
All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. We have modified the agenda. Any other changes to the agenda? Then the agenda is now approved. How about minutes from our November 1st meeting? Are there any changes or additions to the minutes?
I would move approval.
Okay.
You can vote on it.
We usually don't, but there's no changes, but that's okay. The minutes will stay approved. No additional comments on that. Okay. We do have a time for public comments now. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments on matters not scheduled to be heard on the agenda tonight. No comments.
That's the comments, correct?
Yeah. Quiet night. Okay. Then we mostly have housekeeping duties to do tonight. Is that correct? All right. We need to elect officers for the 2018 calendar year. We need a chair and vice chair. Anything other than that? Okay.
So we'd like the chair first.
Yep. Let's. Are there any nominations for the chair?
Nominate Aaron Steele for chair.
I'll second.
Okay. Any other nominations? All right. Are there any other discussion?
I guess the person to ask if there's any discussion.
You notice I always forget to ask for discussion except on that. No, that, I'd be happy to do that.
Awesome.
So, okay. Can we get a voice vote on the chair nomination then? All in favor of appointing Aaron Steele as the chair? All, stay out, please.
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Same. Very good. And we need a vice chair.
Our current, Marvin, are you a current vice chair?
Jerry's
a current vice chair.
Okay. Do you have any nominations? I would nominate Jerry to serve as vice chair again. He's willing?
Yes.
Second.
Discussion.
Anyone else on the board have any interest in?
I'm still learning the
word.
Okay, we have a nomination on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. We have elected our officers. 2018. Meeting schedule for 2018. Do we have that with us too, Derek?
They sent it to us.
And it remains the first Wednesday of the month?
Correct.
At 4 p.m. or 5 p.m.?
4 p.m. And then there was July 4th is the holiday, so we asked the commission if you wanted to meet before the 4th or after, and it was the 11th.
So pretty much able to fall on the first Wednesday of every month except for July, and then that will be the 11th, the second Wednesday.
And can have a 4 o'clock time every meeting? Unless the auditor's doing election training.
Yeah, this year there was a couple of times that the auditor's office needed the room for training, and so then we have a 5 o'clock start time.
They're later in the year. I don't remember what
it
was.
So
they'll probably get us that information, and we can...
Maybe May and October.
About the changes.
Right, that's what it is.
But we had a question about the use of the guest internet. We worked through this with the IT. We're able to have access now to 7 p.m., which for most of our meetings, we're able to accomplish what we need to accomplish within that three-hour time period. Occasionally, we go beyond that. But
Jerry worked hard on doing that, and I want to thank him, and now I don't have laptop open.
That's fair. I mean, I'm balancing their concerns and their processes.
Security is a big deal.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I noticed when I pulled into the parking lot, I pulled in and I parked over by the drop box and picked up my phone, and it asked me if I wanted to connect. So you can pick it up out in the parking lot, so you need to make sure that you...
We had guests Wi-Fi until 6. They extended it for one more hour. They're just really concerned when they're not here in the building. If they have an issue, they can deal with it, but not as quickly as when they're here. So, and then our plan is to, Stephanie's going to help with the time. If it looks like we're going to extend beyond 7, we'll give you a heads up, and you can download information if that helps you.
That's great.
So you can follow along.
Okay, any additional questions about the schedule for next year? If we can get a motion to approve that?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Schedule 2018 is approved. Great. Then we are up to staff to comments. Staff comments?
Yeah, I don't really have a lot other than look for the study that we're looking at, Ames Urban Fringe between Gilbert and Ames, realistically probably the February meeting, as well as the stormwater ordinance. We're still reviewing it internally. We're going to be working with the work groups, and that's going to take some time. So I would plan on February.
And then just outside of that, we just appreciate your involvement and enthusiasm. I think we've had some really good cases this year, and it's, you know, it's all good when it comes to having healthy discussion. And we appreciate your guidance and input.
Commission comments.
I just want to say thank you. It's been a real pleasure to serve on the board or on the commission with you fine folks, and I really appreciated the input from staff that gotten and some of the support in terms of working through some of the protocol and such for serving on the commission. So it's been a really great experience. So thank you.
And now you're working on the other side. So
right.
Yeah, I gave my first zoning board of adjustment case to the zoning board last night.
Congratulations on your job, and hopefully this was helpful and
very much so.
Seeing how,
yeah,
how that can work.
Yeah, I think it had a lot of value going into now working full time. So.
What nights of the week does Ankeny hold the planning commission board of adjustment?
So Tuesday nights, actually.
Well,
but I again.
7 p.m. too, right?
Well, so they hold it 5 o'clock is zoning board, and then 6:30 is the planning and zoning. So they double up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a long, it can be a long night, but no, it's more so to try and balance home life with work life. Having a small child brings interesting things into your life. So, but no, I've still really enjoyed and learned a lot being on the commission. So thank you.
Well, thank you for your service. Congratulations on the job. And good luck.
Other commission comments?
Do we already have a replacement?
Oh, I was going to say, I know that Deb has at least one application, and Jerry has
one or two.
Okay.
So it has, they have to go through the interview or review process, and then recommendation by the Board of Supervisors. But I'll inquire about where they're at with that. I think at one time they were looking for many. I don't know if the number was 60. There was a lot of people that we were looking to try to fill other boards and commissions. So, okay. We serve two of those, Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning Commission.
And we have some information for you. A partial term we need to fill in, or is it?
No, this would be a new, because I was filling a partial, yeah.
She did part of 2016 and then all of 2017.
Do you know off the top of your head which other terms are
Stephen, do you have that sheet?
I think I'm next up, aren't I?
I think you must be.
Yes, Marvin and Aaron in next year.
Four-year terms?
They're
five. Yeah, I think I joined right before you came over from Board of Adjustment.
Okay.
I'm not up to 2020, and Jonathan's later than that.
But do folks get re-nominated automatically if they want to serve, or do they need to go back through the application?
The way it is they ask you to complete an application, and they review, you know, information that you provide. But certainly, if you've had experience serving on a board or commission, that weighs pretty heavily. But yeah, the process has changed a couple, two or three different times since I started. When I started, it was, I've never worked anywhere where the planning department has, you know, does the interviews of planning and zoning commission members or board of supervisors, and that's how it was when I started. And we made a recommendation. I remember, Linda, we had like an informal, it wasn't an interview, but discussion about what was involved with the position and such. And, but now it's more formalized.
Well, at the time that Jerry Cable came on, that I came on, the supervisors were doing individual interviews.
Well, they weren't doing any of that, which is, you know, how I got here. But when I
I don't know that I would
have made it under these kind of strenuous conditions.
There was a short period where applicants, if they were interested, came to a public meeting and got interviewed.
Mine was, I believe it was Daryl Vagy, who worked at Danfoss, was on a commission and was his term was up, and they put a notice in the local Danfoss weekly, in the weekly email that goes out, that the commission was looking for a person, and then we were having some development issues over in Ames, and I thought this would be a good way to be involved in something. And they basically just green flagged me right in, so they didn't know what they were getting into.
Okay.
So who knows what the next iteration of the process will be.
The applications do get reviewed by the board, though.
Any comments? I would just say, end of the year. Won't see you again until the new year.
I
think, as a body, we're doing good work. And I've said this before, but even though the Board of Supervisors doesn't always follow our recommendation, I think that's the whole point. I think our job is to do the work, and our job is to be as forward-thinking as possible and
balance the powers.
And we're serving our role, and I think we're doing it well. I think the discussion earlier about how we have not canceled a meeting or postponed a meeting because of lack of a quorum says a lot about this group and your dedication to doing this. And I think the county is well off because of it.
For sure. And I think the feedback that we got during the meeting and then informally after the meeting from members of the board about how much they appreciate what we do and the quality of the staff's output and, you know, kind of the influence that we have on that is useful to them. So,
and I'd like to add, this is, some of these were said to me, is, but after the last meeting, well, the 4-3 vote on the changing the designation of some areas so they could potentially be annexed by Ames, I was told by a supervisor that they looked at the fact that we did a 4-3 vote. And they said, we really need to look at this. They listened. All three supervisors listened to the audio of our meeting.
They had questions for staff about the vote, too.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I just read the minutes. They listened to the audio. And I thought, you know, even though they all three voted, you know, not the way I hoped they would on that, or, you know, the fact that we weren't unanimous made them look at it and pay some extra attention to that.
Good.
And I thought that was good. So maybe that again. That's our role.
I just got a comment from Supervisor Chitty that he had read my work, so he knew who I was. So I mean he was reading all of our work.
Yeah,
that's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you all for the staff for your hard work together and your support. We appreciate it.
We love our jobs. We love working with you guys, too.
That construction degree.
I can't believe the things you two get fascinated about.
Great. All right. If there are no more comments, then I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Perfect. We stand adjourned.
What is that?